And on the line we have a resident solicitor from Lawler Partners, Fintan Lawler. Hello, Fintan. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Noel. How's the form? Are you
not
well?
Too bad at all. Well, as with what's happening today in housing and rental and all like that, all our questions are to do with that. So we'll start off with the first one, shall I? I am a landlord and have rented out my property for a term of 12 months residential. Now, we're 8 months into the lease and I want to get my tenant out of the property. What steps do I have to take to get the tenant to leave?
Yeah, you see, that's very unfair, Noel. I don't know why people are renting out their premises for a period of 12 months and then 8 months into it and then they're changing their mind and saying, like, I want to get the tenant out. I mean, I think this is part of the problem with landlord and tenant. I mean, the tenant should have the security to stay in that premises for the 12 months. And at least know, 12 months is a very short period of time, as we know. But they should at least know that they have the 12 months and that they're safe for 12 months, not that they're going to get kicked out after 8. But in any event, the landlord is entitled to get the tenant out in certain circumstances. One would be like if the tenant has failed to comply with their obligations under the tenancy. Another would be if the landlord wanted to enter an agreement to sell the property kind of within the next 3 months or so, or 3 months of the 12-month period coming to an end. Or maybe if the landlord or members of his family wants to occupy the property. Now, that has to be accompanied by a statutory declaration, but it's also grounds to getting the tenant out. Another one then is if the landlord wants to substantially refurbish or renovate the dwelling. But again, I think that a lot of those would apply, Noel, in a circumstance where there's been a tenancy arrangement and somebody's been in a tenant maybe for 4 or 5 years, in which case, as we also know, a five-year period can change quite quickly. So if you set out your property now and rent it out to somebody, obviously your circumstances can change in 5 years so that you want to maybe get back into the property or renovate it or whatnot. But in circumstances where you're renting it out kind of 8 months ago and now you've changed your mind, now maybe their circumstances have changed and I don't know, maybe it's a family law.
In lots of cases, a lot, yeah. It's all about the money as well, isn't it?
There are criteria that the landlord needs to be aware of and they probably should get professional advice on it, Noel, rather than dealing with it on the radio show. But it has to be in writing. It has to be signed by the landlord. It has to give the date of the notice and various things like that. There's various steps in it. The PRTB website is also very helpful. That's the Private Residential Tenancies Board. They have a good set of guidelines there as well in relation to what the requirements are.
Well, for interrupting you, Finn. You've given out about 4 or 5 reasons there. So I'm just wondering how binding is a contract, because I'm wondering why we're not like the rest of Europe and even in America when, I mean, people, lifelong rental they have all over the world, and why we're so tenuous here, I suppose, if pardon the phrase, in regards of renting, especially now that houses have become so expensive.
Yeah, I do think that there needs to be more tenants' rights, absolutely. For a situation like this, I mean, I don't know who's in that property, but I mean, let's just say it's a lady with 2 children. I heard today on the radio coming in, Noel, that 84% of the homeless people are females with children, mothers with children. So let's just say that is that circumstance. Now, they probably will get through to Christmas at this stage, but if we're talking a month previous, it's quite possible that those people will be out in the street for Christmas. Like, that's not on, you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah.
Now, with that said, I do understand, and I take both sides, that, I mean, if a landlord, let's just say that this landlord was in a relationship when he rented out this property, and let's just say that he moved in with his girlfriend, you know, 8 months ago. I said, right, well, listen, we'll move in together, and I rent out my place. And that's a great idea, and they move in together, and he rents out his place. And then 8 months later, the relationship breaks down, and she says to him, well, obviously you can't stay here if the relationship is over.
Yeah.
So now he finds himself in a situation that he doesn't want to be putting his tenants out, but here he is 8 months into a 12-month lease, possibly putting a question into the radio show to say, you know, how do I get back into my house? In which case he has to now write to the tenants, and as I say, it has to be in writing and it has to be signed and it has to be given notice.
And is it a put into the context of maybe the tenants are tenants from hell, which we've heard a lot of cases of as well, of property being completely vandalised and stuff like that. Is it very hard to get somebody out in that circumstances, if we just picked on that particular problem. It seems to be.
It's not hard to get them out. Sorry, it's not hard to be entitled to get them out, because you're entitled to get them out on the basis that they fail to comply with their obligations under the tenancy arrangement and the agreement, which is to keep the property in good repair and not cause an annoyance or disturbance to neighbours, and to pay the rent on time and all of those usual obligations. So they've breached all of those. Okay. So from an entitlement point of view, you're absolutely entitled to get them out. If they're going to resist getting out of the property, you have a different battle on your hands, and it can be quite hard to get them out. They'll have to go to the PRTB to get an order from the PRTB, but some people I've known them to ignore an order from the PRTB.
These are the stories that are out there, all right, and that's what's wondering how hard it is. Like, I mean, you may have your rights for them to leave if they're vandalising your property, but it's another story to actually get them on the other side of the threshold.
Yeah, you have to go to the circuit court and get an order, and then you have to try and enforce your order. You have to send it to the sheriff, and you might have the guards there present, and everybody will have to come down to the property in order to get the person moved out.
Okay, the second one, Fintan, then, is it's from a landlord as well. I'm a landlord and have leased the property to a company for a term of 5 years. Now, under the commercial lease, the tenant must paint the interior and exterior of the property in the last year of the lease. Because the tenant has failed to do so, I've paid to have the outside painted. Now, can I offset the costs I have incurred against the deposit paid by the tenant? Or what other items could I offset?
Yeah, that's a good question as well, Noel. I mean, that's really what the most disputes are in relation to the tenancy. At the end of a tenancy, is the return of deposit or the withholding of a deposit, and whether you can withhold part of the deposit or the full of the term of the deposit. I mean, generally, I suppose the security deposit means the sum paid by the tenant to the landlord as a deposit as against any breach by the tenant. So, I mean, by law, the deposit belongs to the tenant, but the landlord can establish a right to retain part of it or all of it in certain circumstances. By way of example, if there was rent arrears, you could take the deposit, or if there was damage to the property, broken windows or items missing, you could take it. Now, the landlord has to understand, though, that there's going to be normal wear and tear of a property. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to happen when you have, you know, people living in a property. It's for external or extraordinary wear and tear and damage caused that the deposit then is forfeited. Again, if there's outstanding maybe bills or charges on the property, you could use a deposit in lieu of, you know, some outstanding utility bills or something like that. And then again, I suppose I started on the last question then, giving out about the fact that the landlord is removing these tenants out before their time. But the flip side can happen as well, is that you might have turned around and done up a house, put in some new curtains and painted it, and maybe a new carpet, and got it all ready and nice and neat, and you put tenants in there and you give them a 12-month letting agreement, and then 7 or 8 months into the letting agreement, they said, oh, listen, we don't like living here anymore, we're going to move down the country, or we're going to move over to somewhere else, or we're going to move into a house or an apartment or whatever, and they up and leave, because that then is damaging to the landlord, because they're after making it all nice and new and fit it all out at the start of the tenancy, and here they have to go through that whole exercise again 8 months later, when they thought they'd have these people for longer. So it'd be another circumstance where you could take the deposit. In light of the particular question where they were supposed to paint the outside, and the landlord painted the outside, I think he can probably set off the cost of painting of the outside as against the deposit, so long as it's reasonable. And by that, I mean, if the deposit, say, was maybe €3,000 and the painting was €1,500, they can offset €1,500 as against the €3,000.
Well, it's on the commercial lease, so I suppose it's part of the agreement, so I suppose you have to look at it in that sense.
As I say, as long as it's reasonable, you can't take an extortionate amount of money for the painting of the exterior of the building and swallow up the whole deposit and say, well, I paid my pal Jimmy now €5,000 to paint the outside of the building, when the market rate for painting the outside of the building should be two.
I suppose the legal part of it, Fintan, is that if, let's say, for instance, you gave your deposit of 500 and the painting of the outside, which they didn't do, was 600, and you could say, well, you're not getting your... Is it legal for them to say, well, it's in the lease, you didn't do it, so you're not getting the deposit? As a matter of fact, We won't argue about it, but you really owe me 100, but we'd forget about it, but I'm keeping the deposit. Is that all legal?
Well, if it went to court, I mean, the cost to be withheld would have to be upheld by the court. But mm-hmm. if it's in the agreement that the tenant has to paint the interior next year of the building in the last year of the lease,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't, I mean, what the landlord should do here is write to the tenant and say, as you are aware, pursuant to the terms and conditions of the lease, you are obliged to paint the interior and exterior of the building. You know, I'm putting you on notice that if you don't do the exterior of the building within, you know, the next 30 days, that I am going to do it myself and I will deduct whatever the cost is from the deposit being held. So either you do it in the next month or I'm going to do it after that, and then get an estimate on it after the 30 days and then write out to them and say, you know, you haven't done it, so I'm now going to go ahead and do it, and here's the indicative cost that I've got.
Okay.
And this is now going to be taken from your deposit. You know, if you're not happy with that situation, you need to contact me in the next 7 days. Otherwise, I'm going to proceed to instruct the painter.
Okay, that's always in preparation, I suppose. Well, the next one is from a tenant, so it's different. I'm renting a flat and I've let the landlord know several times that the radiator in the living room is not working. Now, it's getting cold and I do not feel comfortable sitting in the living room. Can I pay to have the radiator fixed and deduct the cost of my rent? Can I afford to deduct money from the rent because I've been unable to use the living room?
Right. That's another good question. Funny enough, the answer to that question is like the answer, the back end of the last question, which is, technically speaking, you can't withhold rent or it's a breach of your terms and conditions.
Mm-hmm.
But in circumstances where your landlord's not playing ball, I think that they have to do what the landlord needs to do in the last question, which is they need to write to the landlord and say, you know, there's a problem with my radiator and it's leaking and I want you to fix it.
But he said he did that. He said he let him know a few times and he's been ignored.
Yeah, so now he needs to turn around and say that, you know, you're clearly ignoring me. So I'm giving you a cost estimate of what it's going to cost to repair it. And if you don't get somebody else to repair it by 14 days or 7 days or whatever the case may be, that I am then going to turn around and have it fixed myself, and that's the cost of getting it fixed, and I'm going to deduct that from the rent.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you have it done, you send the receipt to the landlord once the problem is solved and say, you know, that's what I'm going to deduct from the rent. Now, you have to be very careful on this one, Noel, because if you withhold rent or part of a rent, that can be deemed to be a breach of the terms and conditions of the lease, which can be enough for the landlord to get the tenant out.
Okay.
So the tenant has to be very, very careful here. But at the same time, he can't have a situation whereby the landlord simply ignored him. Like, that is bang out of order.
Especially this time of year,
He needs to write to him one more time and say, you've ignored my last correspondence. If I don't get a response to this correspondence, I'm going to make arrangements myself to have the repairs fixed, and I'm going to deduct it from the rent if I don't hear from you within 7 days. And then in 7 days, a further letter or a text, maybe, if needs be, going, I haven't heard from you. I have got a price, and the price to fix the radiator is, whatever, €350.
Can they get...
I'm going to go ahead and do it.
Yeah, so can they go to an intermediary, you know, I'm not talking about legal, but the DSP or, what do you call it?
Yeah, the PRTB are very PRTB good at this sort of stuff. No, there's the Private Residential Tenancies Board, I think it's called the Residential Tenancy Board.
Well, would they act in a case like that?
They might be able to give you some guidance or instructions, mm-hmm. but you don't really want to. They would, I think, if needs be, if you have a complaint and you put it before them,
mm-hmm.
that they can have a hearing and they can have an adjudication and whatnot. But I don't think the landlord wants to go there, and the tenant probably doesn't either, particularly at this time of the year when we're coming into Christmas. I think they probably both want to get the radiator, well, certainly the tenant wants to get the radiator fixed, and the landlord doesn't need the grief.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you get a cost estimate from somebody to fix the radiator and say, listen, I'm going to get this fixed and deduct from the rent, I think the landlord might be nearly happy enough saying, right, that's grand.
Having the landlords got an association as well, and if the landlord happened to be one of them, could he appeal to them to say, well, listen, one of your members is not coming up fulfilling his obligations, can you do something about it, like a union sort of thing? Is that feasible?
I think it could be explored. I don't know whether they do have a good organisation from a membership point of view. I know there's the Irish Property Owners Association,
mm-hmm.
the IPOA, but I think that they're more advisory in relation to landlords and rights and taxes and estate planning and management and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether they have memberships. if they do, I don't believe that they would be forced to compel their members to do X, Y, or Z on behalf of a tenant. I kind of get the impression that they'd be there to protect the landlord, not the tenant.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I look upon it as protecting their business and that, not to get bad press. But anyway, I think a lot of people as well in that situation with the radiator and no matter what's wrong with the apartment, they're sort of... It's a different conversation altogether, but there's a state of fear out there that they're just happy to be in under a roof, and no matter what way it is, if you don't get immediate attention, they're afraid to argue about it too much in case they get put out. So there you go. I'd say that's another argument. And other things coming out, Fintan, lately, you know, anomalies, the latest, the big thing about mobile phones and all like that. These things sort of seem to crop up over the years. Do you need someone forensically looking through laws, or is it only happen in cases like, I suppose you'd see them in American movies, Section 4B, when you look back into 80 and 20 and stuff like that, all this type of thing, these anomalies exist in Irish law as well, obviously.
Yeah, well, the kind of law gets updated in the main kind of on an intermittent basis. I mean, as you say, the Graham Dwyer one is very current at the moment, and the use of his data and the retention of his data. A lot of people will be unaware that the Data Protection Act came in force in Ireland 30 years ago in 1988. People think that the data protection only came in this year with GDPR because they've heard of it this year.
Mm-hmm.
But no, the Data Protection Act is here since 1988. They amended it in 2003 under the Data Protection Amendment Act because they felt it needed to be updated to take account of what had changed between 1988 and 2003. And I mean, when it came in 1988, it was kind of the age of computers and the age of the Commodore 64 and the VIC-20 came in the early 80s, and then these computers had a lot of information on them. So people began to scratch their head and say, how are we going to manage this information? How are we going to put some structure in relation to what you can do and not do with the information that you have belonging to people? And as I say, that moved forward in 2003 with the Data Protection Amendment Act. And that has moved forward even further there in the Data Protection Act of 2018, which came into effect in May.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because the General Data Protection Regulation had changed, or the GDPR, which is to deal with social media, is to deal with Twitter, is to deal with Facebook, is to deal with LinkedIn, is to deal with all of these items on social media, has advanced even since 2003 when the Act was amended. And there are certain rules in relation to information that you have belonging to somebody, because... what we have now is called data monetization, which means that information is money.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have information in relation to a particular set of people or a particular audience, well, then you can actually just target that audience with your product. So let's just say you're a sports clothing company, and you have a demographic, and you target all these gym users, and you have all the information from the gyms in Dublin Northside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of a sudden, you don't have to be taking out ads in the Northside People or in the Golden Pages or on the radio stations, because you know exactly who your audience is. You can target them directly.
Okay.
So you have to be careful in relation to what you have with a person's information and what you can do with
the way people seemingly, from what I hear, use Facebook and their own pages, like, they don't need... they do need protection with that, but they seem to put as much information up as is necessary for these people to make themselves targets. So that's another story as well on how silly people can be, even saying to when they're going on holidays and what dates they're going and how wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy, crazy stuff. Okay, Fintan, it's been a great pleasure talking to you. I look forward to talking to you again. Just give us your website again, Fintan.
Yeah, it's www.lawlawpartners.ie.
Okay. Oh, a late query came in, believe it or not. I know we've talked about them many, many times, but it's about a will, so I'll get that into you the next time you're on.
That's perfect. Maybe next week, we'll have a chat on that.
Okay. Thanks very much, Fintan. Have a good weekend. I'll talk to you maybe next week. Thanks a lot, Fintan.
Thanks indeed. Talk to you then.
See you. Bye.
Cheers, Noel. Bye. Bye-bye.
Okay, that's Fintan Lawler, lawlawpartners.ie. If you want any more information, if you're in doubt, see your solicitor. And especially as going to be talking about wills, but about anything, do talk to a solicitor if you need to and get advice. It's always a good idea.